Welcome back, everybody, to the Reflex Blue Show. I am your host, Donovan Beery, and I am still from the Heinz Convention Center in this room that the Sagmeister was talking about so lovingly. And it was the cool gray, the dark gray contrast. There's some detail issues that when you actually start looking in here are not ideal. But I still, we do have room to hang at least 200 coats on these portable racks.
Yeah, I'm going to hang up my jacket in a second, I think.
Okay. And with that, welcome, Brian Singer. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, we met years ago from AIGA and stuff. You've moved on. You were on your local board probably then, and now you're like on the national level board.
Yeah, I took a break for a few years and then just got sucked right back in.
Yeah, you got to be careful, man. They'll bring you back, and then you're like, what? So that's like a 3-year term. Where are you in that?
I just completed my first year, so now I'm actually going to start doing stuff. The first year is sort of getting the hang of things and understanding where the organization is and how things actually work. And then the second and third years are supposed to actually have impact and then lead other people in the third.
So yeah, you got to come up with the idea that you're going to use to change this profession. I mean, not that's a daunting task in any way. You just do that every day anyway, so it's no big deal. Don't fret it.
Yeah, no pressure at all. It's a really interesting time for the organization. I think that there's a lot of opportunity. It's also, getting a large group of people that all have slightly different interests to move along a path is never easy. So it'll be a challenge.
That's exciting. So you guys have the leadership retreat coming up. How was the big gala? Didn't they have the 100-year gala?
The gala was great. Because it's the 100th year, there were, I think, 24 medalists. And
they're just giving them out like candy now.
Well, it was more of a celebration of theirs.
Okay.
They sold out the event. It was packed. It was really great seeing so many people in the same room. That's like really the only event that I get to go to where you get those people all together, you know? So for me, it was more like, star-eyed, oogling all the design rock stars, essentially.
Yeah, because they're the ones who show up, and it's basically almost only them. In a way.
There's a lot. Well, it's funny because they changed the pricing structure. So I think the tables were full of like them and, their companies and sponsors and clients and so forth. But they have a cheaper ticket now. I think it's like $200. And so there were actually quite a few young people there. It was really nice to see.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And do they like sit in the back? Is it like the old bleachers at like the Eagle games where they're the cheap seats and the...
$200 is not a cheap seat, but I think you get to sit at a table versus sitting sort of on the chairs in the back. It's sort of premium seating, I guess. You get everything else. You get to hang out and hobnob with the celebrities, medalists, and all that. I think it's a great model.
But the other part is you still got to get to New York somehow.
Well, yeah, a lot of us, the further west you go, the more expensive it gets. The flight and the hotels and everything gets a little pricey.
Can you be further away and still in the continental U.S.?
Alaska, right?
That's not the continental, is it? I mean, that's...
Oh, that doesn't really count. Well...
No, they count that. The 48,
I think L.A. is probably actually technically further by a little bit.
Okay. And with that, you're actually... you're at Facebook now.
Yes.
Where's their office at?
Their office is in Menlo Park, California. It's between San Francisco and like San Jose.
Oh, so right in the middle of the whole booming.
Yeah, on the peninsula near Palo Alto. Yeah.
Okay. How long have you been there?
I've been there for 2 years now.
And I guess this is where we ask, what do you do at Facebook?
What do you do at Facebook?
I've heard of the site. I mean, it's around. I heard it's been around for a few years. It's a newer company.
Yeah, there's some people that use it, and they use it a lot.
It's like you're peddling crack, but in an app form.
Well,
it's addictive. I get it.
It's funny. It's I'm a late adopter of most technologies, and when I found myself checking Facebook every day, I'm like, I think they're onto something good. Because I was looking at what my friends were doing. I wanted to see people I hadn't talked to in a long time.
You start up a MySpace page, you close it a week later because you realize, or you just left it open because you forgot it even existed. Yeah,
exactly.
It's not like that.
It's not like that at all. And, one of the hidden benefits that I don't even think I realized was being able to, for example, come to a conference, bump into someone you hadn't seen, but be able to reference, weren't you just in San Diego? Or weren't you just doing this? Because you see it online and you might not comment or say anything, but then when you bump into them, you're like, oh yeah, no, I just saw that thing you posted. Or right. Didn't you just have another kid? And it's amazing for like keeping you sort of in the know for what's going on in your friends' lives. But as far as what I do there, I manage a team of communication designers. And it's at the beginning, at least, it was front-end engineers, filmmakers, and designers. As we've grown, we've sort of split off. So there's now a film manager and a front-end engineer manager. And I just manage designers. But basically, we do product marketing, brand marketing. Anything you see that we've produced, there needs to be some sort of communication about it.
Because people don't know about Facebook? Is that what it is? Or they don't know enough about it? They don't know the right things.
Know the right things. It's interesting. There's a lot of tools on Facebook. It's sort of a big, not a big site, but there's a lot of things you can do with it. And a lot of people don't know about those features. Privacy is a great example where you have pretty much control over your privacy, but a lot of people don't use it or don't take the time to actually go and set their settings properly or the way they want them. So it's little things like, not something our team's doing, but something the company's doing is now if you haven't changed your like publishing settings, when you make posts for a certain amount of time, you'll get interrupted at some point, which is not good for the company because it like slows down content production.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's like, hey, we noticed you haven't changed your privacy settings in a while. Have you seen this button right here? Are you sure this is what you want to do? And it's just, it's trying to make sure that the people that are, on the platform, using the product, staying connected with their friends, are aware of what they're doing every time they're doing it, so there's no surprises down the road. There's nothing worse than having someone say, well, I did this, and then this happened, and it surprised me. And so we're trying to make sure that people understand what they're doing.
And what was it that convinced you to – because you've been working for yourself for a while.
Yeah.
To make the jump and go corporate, go in-house.
I know, right? I was running Altitude for about 7 years and doing just fine, doing great work, made more money than I ever had before, went home at 6 p.m. every day. There was nothing wrong with it at all. But I wasn't learning as much as I wanted to and wasn't really willing to take the steps that it would require for me to like I didn't want to grow the company. I didn't want to become like a bigger company. But what I do want to do is learn and push myself. So the most scary thing in the world would probably be to give up all that freedom and go in-house and try to influence or have an effect on like a larger corporate environment. And it is truly challenging. It is one of the more difficult things I've done.
And what have you learned anything that you didn't expect because of it?
Oh, I've learned a lot. For me, it's actually been less about the specific work itself and more about how you set a team up for success, how you develop the team, what kind of skill sets are needed, how you strategize about the workflow coming in and how...
So you didn't want to run a bigger shop and now all of a sudden you're running a big shop.
But I don't have to go sell. That's the other thing.
Okay,
maybe
okay.
I'm not a natural salesperson. In fact, I almost try not to sell, I also don't like doing all of the, day-to-day, like, finance stuff and the billing and all that kind of stuff. So there was that component, sort of the team management part. But then there was also the partner management, like making sure that they understood the process, figuring out where the roles and responsibilities lie in a very fast-moving and ever-shifting environment. I would say I've learned a ton just from seeing how it's done and what it really takes to get something launched. At a company like Facebook.
Wonderful. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back and talk about what you're doing here now.
Great.
So what does bring you all the way from California? Like they could have, why didn't they just have you speak at last year's? It was in San Francisco. You just walk down the block.
I don't know. They could have made my life so much easier.
But I guess speakers aren't important if they don't fly away. So like James Victoria spoke in San Francisco. He lives like 2 hours from here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I get that too. Like, oh, if we bring someone from California to Boston, they're important. But if you go to California and see a California speaker, I don't know if it means anything.
Well, maybe it's more interesting because I'm not from the area.
Yeah.
People in San Francisco have known me for a while. I think I'm not sure when they started doing this, but Debbie Millman has been curating the leadership track.
This is the first year of that part. Last year there were only four conferences going on at a time, and so now they've added a fifth.
Okay.
And they shoot brought in some big names. They're impressive.
Yes. And I think she's responsible for bringing me here. She sent me a note and said, hey, here's what I'm doing. Here's the type of people I want to bring in. I want you to be a part of it. And I was like, yeah.
So you're on the leadership track then.
I'm on the leadership track, and it's very humbling because, if you were to rank everyone on that track in order, I'm like at the very bottom. But just to be included in that company is pretty awesome.
I would say just list us alphabetically. I'll be fine with that.
Yeah, well, we can do that as well. But yeah, no, I just the caliber of speakers and the quality of speakers at this conference have kind of blown my mind.
It did. Bringing her in has really changed that because I mean, if you'd remove those, you'd still have a pretty good conference like it's always been, but mm-hmm. you wouldn't have that.
Yeah, you wouldn't have Seth Godin on stage or Malcolm Gladwell just talking smack about airlines. It's been amazing.
So what is it you're speaking about in your talk?
Well, my talk was titled How to Get Rich in Design, which the talk actually has very little to do with what you might think. I basically walk through a series of self-initiated side projects, nothing that I got paid for, but that have had added sort of value and meaning to my life, be it things I'm interested in locally like homelessness, broader topics like the economy or politics, for example.
You mailed me something during the last election in my office, and I think when you were for yourself, it just was a Coke and a Pepsi can, but instead of Coke and Pepsi, it said like Romney and Obama.
Yeah, like these sort of projects that get people thinking, because as everyone was fighting for their particular side in that election, and I obviously was fighting for mine, I thought it would be more interesting to point out that we're in a two-party system still. And it's a very heavily branded two-party system, and sort of make the association with the Cola Wars, which I thought I was being clever. Most people just got pissed because they liked Coke but were voting for Obama, or they hated Romney, whatever it was they were.
See, the only part that upset me in our show is obviously that you didn't have a Mountain Dew in there, because that's who we voted for. So then we're trying to figure out, who's the Mountain Dew candidate?
Who is?
It took us a while. And we're like, we didn't really want it to be Paul Rand, but he might have been, or.
Do the do? I don't get. I have to give that some thought.
Like, that might be the Green Party, but it's like the unknown thing, but it's there. It's still in the soda aisle.
Still around.
And then you probably would have upset us. You would put the wrong candidate on the Mountain Dew can,
Yeah.
They never forget.
People get upset when you mess with their soda.
No, but I got the message too. It was well designed, and it was like, you're voting, but it's still the same. There's a lot more similarities than in the two parties than people might.
Yeah, it's basically sugar content, right? Is the difference between Coke and Pepsi?
Well, once they took the cocaine out.
Okay.
I mean, in the day, way back when, maybe the Coke was had that little differentiation. Actually, Pepsi probably wasn't even around then.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Well.
So how does this get rich?
the whole point of the talk, and I sort of end on some of the work that was done with UCSF Children's Hospital, is that, it took me a while to discover this in my career, but where I'm really finding value in what I do is in identifying projects that mean something to me and pouring my energy and resources into those, the texting while driving, twit spotting campaign, things like that to me make me not financially rich, but rich, like, I don't know, fulfilled, I think is the word. I don't think anyone in graphic design got rich through graphic design, like financially rich. It's just, you'd have to win the lottery or something. We're in the wrong profession for that. But I feel very fulfilled with the sort of the path I've taken and the types of projects that I pursue on the side.
I've never known anyone in this profession that got into it for the money and was good at it.
Right.
That's kind of what it is.
Exactly. So the point of the talk was really that, we go to work and we get paid to do work. It doesn't necessarily have to fully overlap with what your passion is. And I've sort of found a way to separate those two between, what I get paid to do and then what I choose to do with my sort of creative passion.
That's wonderful. And Did you speak morning, afternoon? Have you already spoke?
I spoke on Tuesday in the morning.
Oh, you're lucky then. You got one of the early spots. So
I
then you
did.
So you've been enjoying the conference.
I've been going out for drinks every night. Yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah, you talk to the people who do the Friday morning one. It's like you don't see them during the week because they're like, I'm getting ready for my presentation.
Yeah, and it's nerve-wracking all week and whatnot. Going early was great. Going after Seth, though, was not, you know, it's hard to follow up something like that. So
yeah, I heard good things about his.
It was so good, yeah. Just like both Seth and Malcolm, you know, you're sitting in the audience and I'm just thinking, I just want to hang out with these guys. I just want to like go have dinner or something because everything that comes out of their mouth sounds so smart. It's coming from an interesting perspective. I'm just like, I want to be friends with those dudes.
All right. Well, we're going to take one final break and we'll be back with Brian Singer.
Oh, basically I was photographing people that were texting while driving.
Whoa, okay, so that's like everybody right now. You're just driving around and just... Now, isn't taking photos of people while you're driving and they're driving just as bad as them texting?
It would probably be worse. So I've never taken a photo while driving.
Okay.
I always take the photos as a passenger.
I thought maybe you just slammed on your brakes, stopped the car, no matter how fast you're going, and then started snapping photos. Might even be...
That actually might work. In my commute, I've been driving – well, not driving, but riding as a passenger for a lot of a carpooling. And just looking out the window on a 30-mile stretch of 101 in California, I was blown away by how many people were on their phones, doing something with their phone, checking email or texting or whatever. And so I started photographing it, and then I put up a website, and then I put up billboards. So the billboards are essentially just photos of people texting while driving with – you can kind of see their faces. You can see the phones. That was all well and good. And then towards the end of March, Time and Gizmodo both did pieces on it. And then it just went completely viral really fast. I was getting – my phone was ringing all day long. People called my mom trying to get a hold of me to interview, to do something. You know, ended up on the Today Show. It's been on a lot of radio.
And what do you call this? Is it their name or is it just Brian sitting in a passenger car taking photos of random people on the phones?
That would have probably been I tried to come up with a catchier name. It's called twit spotting.
Yeah, twit spotting is much catchier.
Yeah, so texting while in traffic. The response has been mind-blowing. It's been, 97% positive. There have been some really interesting, somewhat death-threatish emails that I've gotten. But for the most part, people are very supportive.
What are they death threatening? Like, what is it?
None of your business. Why are you're creepy. Why are you, stay out of our lives. Why are you narking for the police? Like, really kind of interesting. It kind of makes me wonder what's going on in people's lives.
Yeah, no one's getting arrested because of this.
No. Yeah. No. And basically what all I'm doing is calling attention to something that is pretty well researched as being extraordinarily dangerous to be doing, on par with driving with the alcohol limit. It causes deaths and accidents every year. And it's when you start actually paying attention and watching, it is scary how common the behavior is and how it's sort of seeped into society as like our natural, you're just driving along, something happens, you pick up your phone. Your pocket buzzes, you look at your phone. It's scary. And it's probably going to get worse before it gets better.
Now, the real question is it going to get worse before the self-driving cars come and fix it?
I don't know.
Is that the solution? Is self-driving cars the solution or is...
No, I actually think software is the solution. I think Apple might be... I read something about Apple starting to look into this or was working on this. But there's an app called Lifesaver that it's targeted at parents who buy their kids' phones, right? But it basically, if your phone's moving a certain speed or faster, it locks it. And there's a way to unlock it, obviously, like for an emergency call or if you're like a passenger. But it's all logged. So, the parents can sort of like call their kids out on if, hey, wait, I know you were driving because you had the car, things like that.
No, Mom, I just run 50 miles an hour. I'm awesome.
Exactly. So it's a really interesting way because that's probably the best place to affect behavior when people are learning how to drive and be safe as opposed, the people I see are usually people going to work and commuting and they just should know better. I think there are a lot of efforts that'll probably come through software. I'm also looking forward to those self-driving cars.
Yeah, you guys are going to get them first. I mean, you're right there in the bay. area. If anyone gets self-driving cars sooner than others, you'll get them before us in Omaha. I'm pretty sure about it.
Possibly, yes. It'll be interesting to see how they've been testing them. But, like, what does it take to really get something like that on the road, prove it's safe, and then, you know, as soon as it starts rolling out, there'll be an accident at some point.
I mean, it's like one of those things where they talk about if they pardon a bunch of low-level pot users from prison, someone's going to kill somebody because it's a numbers game. You let so many million people out, something's going to happen. You just have no doubt to deal with it.
Yeah, wasn't there like the first death from pot in Colorado or something recently after Colorado had done?
Yeah, but of course it was a weird thing where it's like it was a freak thing that I think there's like a, I mean there's.
But it made great headlines, didn't it?
Right, right.
So yeah, no, it'll be really interesting to watch. I mean, I think Tesla has done, you know, it for the electric cars, it's taken a while. They had some safety issues. I think smart cars, you know, those little tiny ones?
Oh, yeah. There's like two right outside of our hotel.
Yeah. You look at those and you're like, oh, that can't be safe. But you know the hurdles they have to go over in testing and proving and going through all the crash tests to prove that, like, yeah, you can drive those on the freeway and it's okay. But still, you look at them and you're like, hmm. So they have to get over a lot of hurdles before they're going to become mainstream, I think.
Okay. Well, where do people go is it Twit Spotting? Is
that yep. Twitspotting.com. Okay. And there's a Facebook page where there's a lot more interesting commentary because photos get posted and people comment and then argue about them. Something about comment threads is just fascinating and horrific to watch. But
and you probably see a lot of them. I mean, with the job.
Yeah, for sure. And even with all the articles that were written about the project, I stopped reading them after a while because what became very clear to me is like 90% of people didn't actually read the article. They just had a knee-jerk reaction. They're like, this guy's an idiot. Of course it's worse to drive to take photos while you're driving. What kind of asshole is he? You know, I'm like, the first thing it says is like, he does this only as a passenger and never while driving. I'm like, you didn't read the first paragraph of the story. So, but it continues and people just keep posting that and arguing about that. And you're like, nobody actually reads anymore. They read the headline and then they get angry. So,
that's wonderful. So, yeah. Twitspotting.com. Do you have other websites to promote? Like, people want to see more of your work? I mean, because you go to Facebook.com, and who knows what you'll end up seeing?
Yeah.
I don't know if you want credit for what's in my newsfeed, so I wouldn't take that.
Yeah, no credit needed there or warranted. The only other site to promote, I think, would be IamSomeGuy.com, and that's basically where I post most of my fine art projects. So things I've done on the side that both in the sort of more artistic exploration as well as the sort of social commentary.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And we look forward to, over the next 2 years, being on the national board, you completely doing something that will revolutionize our industry and change our lives for the better. No big pressure.
I'll try my hardest, for sure.
That's all we're asking. I mean, that's setting the bar low, but we'll take it if you can do even that minuscule amount.
I'll do my best.
Thanks, Brian.
The Reflex Blue Show with Donovan Beery is hosted at 36point.com. Music by Dustlab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.